morning, TNC family, on this final Sunday in September. I want to talk to you today from the scriptures about how to get along with everybody. And I want to talk about this partly because when you read the biographies of Jesus in the Bible, it's impossible not to notice that for Jesus, there was nobody he wouldn't embrace and love and get along with. And of course, Jesus is the one whose life and person we admire and are students of here. And he got along with everybody, not because he was a people pleaser, but because he was just wondrously kind. There was a kindness in Jesus, a genuine kindness that enabled him to always try to do something that would be part of the answer and not part of the problem, part of the healing and not part of the division. He always took extra time to be with people, extend grace, welcome folks from all backgrounds, ages, genders, ethnicities, and economic situations. No one fearful was more fearful after being with Jesus. No one worried was more worried after being with Jesus. No one in sorrow was filled with greater sorrow after being with Jesus. He never tried to add burdens to the already burdened. It was said of Jesus, Matthew chapter 12, Isaiah 42, that he never broke a bruised reed. His heart was just wonderfully kind. Even to those who didn't like Jesus, you'll note, they didn't like him because of how wide his acceptance was and how his love for others threatened their love of power and control. It wasn't because he was unkind to them individually. So, partly I want to talk to you today about how to get along with everybody, because for Jesus, there was nobody he wouldn't embrace and love and get along with. And also, partly I want to talk with you about this because the Apostle Paul, who went around the Roman Empire in the decades after Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, when Paul established churches and communities, one of his main bits of counsel involved not orthodoxy, but orthopraxy, not how to think, but how to live. And his considered and repeated counsel was always about getting along. Romans 12:18, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with everyone. Romans 14, verse 19, let us make every effort to do what leads to peace and building each other up, not tearing down. Ephesians 4, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as God forgave you. Ephesians 5, submit to one another, out of reverence for Christ. Hebrews 12, work at living in peace with everyone. Titus 3, avoid foolish controversies, genealogies, dissensions, and quarrels about the law, for they are unprofitable and worthless. As for the person who stirs up division, it's obvious that such a person is out of line, rebellious against God, and by persisting in divisiveness, he cuts himself off. Get along with everybody, Paul says. And you understand, right, that Paul is not preaching some theory or theology to believe in your head. He's articulating a whole new vision for living life in general, and he's doing it in the context of real communities of real people trying to share life together in new and real ways. And so I want to talk to you today from the scriptures about how to get along with everybody. And specifically now, I want to mention four strategies for getting along. And each strategy is going to start with the first letter of each word, get along with everybody. So here we go, how to get along with everybody. Number one, get over yourself. Get over yourself. And what I mean by this is it's not all about you. You're not the center of the universe, the star of the story, the main character of the drama, because 8 billion people on this planet aren't living 8 billion different stories. We're living a shared story. Now, I understand, and psychologists will tell us, it's common for my brain, because we don't literally all share brains, for my brain to have an internal drama called the story of my life. After all, it's my body, my family, my job, my relationships, my money. And when stuff happens, it happens to me. When I get sick, you don't. When a job offer I'm expecting doesn't come through, you're still employed. When a romantic opportunity ends in rejection for me, you still go home to the partner. Or the opposite outcomes. I received an unexpected honor, not you. A friend started a business and made me an offer I didn't expect, but you're still working for minimum wage. That gathering with a group of friends turned into love for me, not you. So David, you can say it's us, that we're living a shared story, but really, it's more individual than that. You are the star of your story, and I'm the star of mine. It's just the way it is. But TNC, that's exactly wrong. And we have to overcome this perspective, because super real talk here, you will not get along with folks if in your heart and mind, you are the main character of the drama and everyone else is your supporting cast. You're the star and everyone else around you are props, extras, stagehands, roadies, and security for your story. Because it's not your story and it's not my story, it's ours. This is exactly why Jesus prayed to God his Father in John 17, help them become one even as we are one. It's not join my choir, I'm the diva. It's everybody, lower your voice and delight in the harmony. It's not join my practice squad and help me improve. It's we are on a team together, which is part of what A.J. Jacobs wants us to see in his little book called Thanks Thousand, in which he writes, I'm agnostic, verging on atheist, but I'm a believer in gratitude, and so I say a, quote, prayer before I eat, although it's not really a prayer. I'll be sitting around the table with my family and say, thank you, farmer who grew these carrots, truck driver who hauled them, and cashier at the grocery store who rang me up. He writes, one day my 10-year-old son said, Dad, they can't hear you. And so I thought I would go on a quest to actually thank people in person, and to make it simple, I decided to pick just one item, an item I can't go without, my morning coffee, at a coffee shop called Joe's Coffee Company. And A.J. Jacobs' book is just about his journey to thank every single person who had a role in making his morning coffee at Joe's Coffee Company possible. And his quest takes him months and takes him around the world, barista, manager, coffee buyer, founder, initial investors in Joe's Coffee Company. And then there are the coffee grinders and the company who makes the strainer and the digital scale for the coffee, the kitchen tools and the developer of the coffee flavor chart and the manufacturers of the tasting spoon. He thanks the trucker who drove the coffee beans, then the people who paved the road, and then he thanked the people who made the asphalt for the people who paved the road. And he thanks architects, biologists, designers, miners, goat herds, farmers, water purification plant personnel, the pest control company that services the warehouse where the coffee beans are stored. And he comes to realize that his coffee requires the combined work of a shocking number of people, over 1,000, and thus the title of his book, Thanks a Thousand. Now, my favorite part of the book is when he tracks down and thanks the guy who invented the plastic lid on his coffee cup. He writes, I've never paid much attention to the white plastic lid on my morning coffee, but when I inspect it, I notice that it's not an ordinary lid. It's got a funky design. It's got depth, and it looks like a chunk of an upside-down hexagonal dome. And the sipping hole, it's almost elegant, crescent-shaped, like a quarter moon. And so I did some research and discovered that lids can be classified into several categories, depending on how you open them. There's the pinch, the puncture, the peel, and the pucker. I learned that coffee lids are a huge business with over 1 billion sold per year. In short, I learned that, as with almost everything I take for granted, humans have put an astounding amount of thought and care into creating the coffee lid. So I located and emailed the inventor, a guy named Doug Fleming, and when I went to thank him, he told me that the lid is actually a crucial and wildly undervalued part of drinking coffee. Coffee isn't farm to cup, he said. It's farm to face. You actually have to drink it, and coffee is very delicate. It can be ruined with a bad lid. That's why the ideal lid is one that doesn't interfere with the drinking experience. You don't want it to leak. Nobody likes a leaky lid. But more than that, it's one that doesn't interfere with the aroma. Too many lids restrict the aroma from escaping, and I'm working on an even better design. It's going to be the Mona Lisa of coffee lids. But I can't tell you the secret because it's a cutthroat game, the lid biz. This guy's passionate. Jacobs writes, I found myself smiling and chuckling and discovering an unexpected joy in learning about how much brain power has gone into this seemingly mundane object. And then Jacobs says, Doug Fleming taught me to pay attention to the hidden masterpieces all around us, from the way the on-off switch on my lamp has a smooth indentation for my thumb, to the star-shaped holes in my spaghetti strainer, to the small words of geniuses everywhere. Thanks a thousand. Which is part of what John Donne is getting at in his famous poem, No Man is an Island. No man is an island entire of itself, he writes. Every man or woman is a piece of the continent, part of the main. If a clod of dirt be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were washed away, as well as any manner of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. They used to ring a bell to signal when someone died. Never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee, because if one person dies, a part of me dies. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, if one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. It's about mutuality and sharedness. And it's easy to get along with people who are humble. I build into you and you build into me. I give and you give. I sacrifice, you sacrifice. Your joy is my joy. Your pain is my pain. TNC, we're connected. So how dare I go through life thinking, let someone else carry the load. Set me up, pay the bills, give the offerings, do the work, make the sacrifice, take the time. Because we're connected. And the second it's clear to me that you think you are the star of the story, then we will struggle to get along. So we have to get over ourselves. Or as Paul writes in Philippians 2, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but consider others better than yourselves. Because we're connected. Now, this is a major part, actually, of the value of religion and meditation in general, and coming to church and spirituality. It's to put us in touch with not just ourselves, but what is larger than ourselves. It helps us experience a transcendent God and helps us cultivate an awareness that we belong to one another. So, want to get along with everyone? Number one, get over yourself. Which leads to number two. Number two, second strategy for getting along with everyone, ask more questions. Ask more questions. Now, this is about genuine questions, unhurried, unloaded, uncontrolling questions, seeking simply to learn and to know and to hear. Think about it this way. Imagine you were meeting with someone for lunch in the middle of the workday. Like, really imagine it. Are you imagining it? Is it Mexican, Italian, French, American, Indian, or some other kind of cuisine? And are you imagining the kind of food they prefer or that you prefer? Now, fast forward and imagine that later that night, you were writing the story of the lunch in a journal, the morning of waking up and getting ready, and the morning at work before the lunch, and then the drive to the restaurant. Are you imagining it? Okay, does the script to the story you're writing have you at the center or them? Does it start with your morning or theirs? And is the script about the lunch about what you said and felt while eating or about what they said? And I'm just trying to get us to break free from the script that places me at the center of the lunch. Okay, back to the lunch really quick. Is your goal to listen or talk? To be encouraged or to encourage? And during the conversation, do you spend a lot of time thinking about what you will say next or about what they're saying? And then, do you ask good questions? TNC, this is about as practical as it gets, because when others know, when it's clear to them that you want to hear about them and learn about them and learn from them, you'll find that folks like you and you'll start getting along with more folks. So ask more questions. Ask and then follow the clues. Be curious. In every conversation, in that moment, if you can identify even one tiny speck of interest, explore that thing. Explore it a bit closer. Ask them why, what they think, what they've learned, how they'd approach something you're facing. And if they talk about the weather, that's a clue. Ask them about nature or vacation destinations or their favorite season. And if they talk about social media, that's a clue. Ask them about their favorite websites. If they talk about loneliness, that's a clue. Ask more. If they talk about sports, that's a clue. If they talk about family, that's a clue. Follow the clues. Ask about them. And then listen. And then follow the next clue and the next and the next. And you'll end up in places and with people and ideas you never could have come to if you were more interested in letting their comment lead to your next idea. Ask more questions. Want to get along with everybody? Ask more unhurried, unloaded, uncontrolling, curious-driven questions. And as you're doing that, pay attention to what's good and true and right and noble and admirable. Now, this is leading us to the third strategy for getting along with everyone. Number one, get over yourself. Number two, ask more questions. And now number three, wake up to what's good. Wake up to what's good. Not just in a lunch conversation, but wake up to what's good in general in life. Warren Bennis writes in his classic book on becoming a leader about a junior executive at IBM who was involved in a very risky venture for the company. And this junior executive ended up losing IBM $10 million as a result of a bad risk. And so he's called into the office of Tom Watson Sr. Watson Sr. was the founder of IBM, led it for 40 years. And this junior executive is overwhelmed with guilt and fear, and he just walks into Watson's office and blurts out, "I know you've called me in for my resignation. Here it is. I resign." Watson says, "You must be joking. I just spent $10 million educating you. I can't afford your resignation." He found the good. Something we need more than ever in our public discourse. I remember during my days in college, studying history and being involved in political discourse and so on. And back then, some of you might remember, any good Republican could name a handful of Democrats they liked, that they thought were good people, even though they did not agree with everything they said, and vice versa. And I remember learning about Republican President Ronald Reagan and Democratic Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill. Notorious for liking each other and being friends and engaging in meaningful dialogue and not saying bad things about one another in public, not giving each other bad nicknames. Okay, now just stop and just think about this. I'm saying it wasn't that long ago that somebody who was essentially a Democrat could name a large number of Republicans for whom she or he had great respect and regard. Not a perfect person, not a person for whom they agreed with all the time, but a person they respected and found good in. But today, instead of finding the good, folks just want to compare themselves or someone they support to someone they think is worse. As if the criteria is, yes, my guy's bad, but your guy is worse. And friends, one of the reasons we cannot get along in our culture is if your standard is just to get defensive and compare yourself or your candidate to what's worse, we will not get along. Instead, we must make the standard finding the good. What if, like for 1 week, all you did is find the good in other people? And I don't just mean political people now. I mean that family member, that friend, that work colleague, that classmate. And by the way, find me a major faith that supports us versus them. Or they are worse than me. You can't. Barbara Brown Taylor writes so eloquently about this in her book, Holy Envy, where she highlights the best of all religions, but then calls us to be people who always find the good in others. TNC, do you wake up to the good? Do you see abundance and beauty? Do you see opportunities for grace and forgiveness? Do you look at people who've made less than $10 million mistakes and say, I'm not going to bail on you because you are important to me and I care about you and we're sharing life together? Because the more you become the kind of person who wakes up to what's good, the more people will be attracted to you and you will get along with everybody. Which leads me to number four. Number four, expect to encounter God in others. Expect to encounter God in others. Now, this is about what you experience in your interactions with others. What you expect. One of the sports podcasts I listen to regularly is hosted by a former NFL scout. Because there's a whole field in sports centered around scouts, experts in seeing what lies beneath the surface of another person, what potentially they could become, if what's truly inside of them could get realized. I see a star NFL wide receiver in that high school senior. I see an NFL franchise quarterback in that University of Michigan backup. Or this same idea gets played out when teachers see things in students that the student herself doesn't see. I see a future CEO in her. I see a future Nobel Prize winning physicist in her. Said another way, these folks encounter something deeper and more in seemingly ordinary interactions and conversations and relationships. Now, the great C.S. Lewis talks about this in a lecture he gave called The Weight of Glory, in which he said, quote, there are no ordinary people. You've never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilization, these are mortal. And their life is to ours like the life of a gnat. But it is to immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit. This does not mean that we are to be perpetually solemn, he says. But he is talking about the weight of this reality. He goes on, we must play, but our merriment must be of that kind which exists between people who have from the outset taken each other seriously. No flippancy, no superiority, no presumption. And our love must be a costly love with deep feeling, for your neighbor is the holiest object presented to your senses. For in him, in her, is Christ. Lewis goes on, it is with the awe and the circumspection proper to them that we should conduct all of our dealings with one another, all friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. And TNC, if we begin to expect to encounter the divine in our daily interactions, we'll probably be more likely to get along with whoever crosses our path. Because if we expect the divine, then we'll start to see that somehow, in some way, God is present in that person's life. We'll see that the best things about them are evidence of God's action and indwelling. And the worst things about them are arenas where God is currently at work, present to transform, renew. And so our job is to engage in God's already ongoing activities, to notice that God is already at work in the life of the person that you are interacting with. Which means my job and your job is to wake up and to catch up with what God is already doing. And if this is our orientation, I'm telling you, we will begin to treat people differently, better, with more genuine kindness. And when you read the biographies of Jesus in the Bible, it's impossible not to notice that there was this kindness in him, a wonderful kindness, that allowed him to get along with everybody. And I believe it was rooted in his understanding of God's presence and love and work in that other person. So, how can we begin to get along with everybody? Get over yourself. Ask good questions. Wake up to what's good and expect to encounter the divine. Let's pray. God, thank you for your unfailing kindness, overwhelmingly awesome grace, never-ending mercy, infinite wisdom. I pray that every person listening today would know those things, receive them, soak them in, and then extend them in all their spheres. And now, TNC, may the Lord bless you and keep you, make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.